Imagine you're in prison and you mess up. Maybe you lose your temper and punch a corrections officer or take a conflict with your cellmate and settle it with fists. That can land you in administrative segregation, solitary confinement. And too many American inmates have languished in solitary, not knowing when they'll get out, not being allowed any privileges like calls from home. And when they do get out, they're often in a worse way than before, full of anger, seeking retribution. But a prison in the Upper Peninsula has found a way to change that narrative. The Alger Correctional Facility is easing prisoners out of solitary, and the outcomes are encouraging. Maurice Chamaz with the Marshall Project, where he's written a story titled How to Get Out of Solitary One Step at a Time. Maurice, do we have any idea how many American inmates are held in isolation?
At the lowest number, around 80,000, but there are estimates that put it up to as much as 100,000 because sometimes the way that these security classifications are tracked are sort of different state to state.
What does living in isolation mean?
Generally, across the country, it means 23 hours a day in a cell. Usually you get an hour out of cell time in a cage that's used for recreation. Your food is often handed to you through a slot in the door by corrections officers. The most sort of brutal aspect of it, when I think about it, is the fact that the only human contact you tend to have is with corrections officers as they shackle you to bring you out of your cell, either for recreation or for a shower.
And I know there's no set answer, but typically how long might someone spend living like that?
It can vary. In some prisons, it's just a punishment where you go in for a week or two as punishment for, you know, a small infraction. But at other prisons, including a lot in California and New York, you can go in with no idea when you're getting out. And there are stories of people spending years, even decades in solitary confinement.
What does it take to get back to the general population?
That also has, you know, proven to vary. In a lot of places in the country, you know, people were languishing and it slowly became more and more of a political issue over the past 5 years. I sort of watched as, you know, one story in the New York Times led to one Senate hearing, led to a speech by the president, and slowly it grew on everyone's radar. And different prisons around the country started trying to find ways to get people out of solitary into general population. And usually those programs, those ways of getting out, had to do with basically having good behavior and not having any infractions while in solitary.
And thus we dive into the story you have written. And it focuses largely on Alger's warden, Catherine Bauman. Tell us what she decided to do in the summer of 2009 and what led to this.
Sure. Well, the Michigan Department of Corrections had been sued over the death of someone in isolation. Throughout the country, you often hear of people who are in segregation and might have a medical problem. Help doesn't get to them as quickly. They die. And often this leads to lawsuits. So for whatever specific reason, sort of in that environment, the Michigan Department of Corrections went and asked wardens throughout the state, what are some ways we can try to just reduce the number of people in solitary confinement? Not get rid of it altogether, but just get, you know, the data to look a little bit better. And Bauman basically assembled her staff up in the UP. It's all mostly people who are from around the area, and they devised this system. And, you know, there had been other systems sort of similar. It was based on a general idea that behavior could be a way for men to prove that they were ready for the general population. But what was really interesting and kind of unique at the time was that they created six stages that the men would pass through on their way from solitary confinement to general population. And through good behavior, and also through writing essays about their experiences, they would go from one stage to another. And at each stage, they would maybe get a perk. And sometimes the perks were very small, a basketball or a television in their room. But other times they'd get things like a phone call home. And over time, this has allowed them to cycle lots and lots of men out of solitary confinement and back into the general population.
It's behavioral psychology 101, isn't it? Give them something work for.
Yeah. What struck me was that this seems like it sort of swept throughout the country fairly quickly. And part of the reason why is that at root, it looks very simple, right? All it is just giving the prisoners something to kind of look forward to and hope for and work towards.
And so since it started in 2009, this incentives and segregation program, how has it changed life at Alger?
Well, it's allowed them to close an entire wing of their solitary confinement blocks. I think it was 88 people at a time, and turn that into general population. They don't have data or statistics on the number of people who have gone through the program and gotten out. But it seems clear that it sort of transformed the environment. I visited a few months ago, and, you know, I've been to a lot of prisons, including some solitary confinement blocks, and they tend to be really brutal places. There's a lot of shouting, a lot of people who, just to get attention from the officers, you know, bang on the doors or even, you know, fling bodily fluids or their belongings at the walls. But when you walk into the Alger Correctional Facility, it's very quiet. Even the men who are in the really brutal solitary confinement situation, because they're trying to prove to officers that they're ready for general population, tend to be a lot quieter. They tend to be a lot more respectful. I heard stories of officers sort of coming to care about the inmates and recommending books for them and sort of looking out for them in a way that was totally unique.
I'm talking with writer Maurice Chamat, whose piece in forthemarshallproject.org looks at ways that prisons are trying to work prisoners out of solitary one step at a time. And one of the things that really jumped at me, Maurice, was the idea that Alger warden Catherine Bowman wanted essays that the prisoners had to write. And it struck me because that is something that I did when my children, who are now long grown, but when they were young and somebody did something they shouldn't have, I would send them to their room. Write me an essay. Tell me what happened, why that was wrong, and what you're going to change. And I read that and went, look at this. I have to imagine that has made a difference really on both sides of the equation, both for the prisoners and for prison staff.
Absolutely. It was fascinating to read some of these essays, which the staff there shared with me. I mean, a lot of the men, you can tell from the essays, maybe don't have beyond a high school education or a middle school education, are writing with a lot of depth and a lot of sort of humility about their place in the prison and about the situation that they find themselves in. And a lot of them told me, you know, by writing it down, I realized that this thing that I thought was a big deal, this fight I was having with a cellmate or with a guard, really boiled down to sort of nothing. And then on the flip side, the guards, through reading the essays, have become a lot more sympathetic to the prisoners. They understand, oh, this prisoner boiled over and hit his cellmate not because he's just a bad guy, but because the situation sort of became intolerable for him because these two men live in a cell together or whatever the situation may be. So it humanizes both sides for each other, and then it also gives the situation, and this was fascinating to me, sort of a flavor of almost parental discipline like you describe. In other states as well as Michigan, you often hear about these wardens and guards talking about the prisoners as if it's almost like their son or daughter who they're trying to sort of steer from mistakes onto a cleaner path.
And as you point out in your piece, Alger's was one of the first programs of its kind in the nation, but it certainly is spreading this idea of a step-down approach or these stages to earn your way back to general population. Are there common traits among all of these programs throughout these 30 states?
There are. I mean, usually behavior is at the center of them. Usually the warden or the guard sort of have a say over, you know, whether you move from one stage to another. Almost all of them have kind of incentives as you move through them. There is some variation, though, in terms of how long people tend to stay in the stages. And some of the programs have been criticized for basically not doing enough and for allowing very minor infractions to kind of set you back a lot. But, you know, one thing that I found through the reporting on this was that programs like the one at Alger, like one in Virginia, like Washington, they become tools that advocates or prisoners themselves or family members can kind of point to and say, well, this other prison has figured out a way to do it. Why can't you? And so you see prisons taking on these programs out of their own will, you know, out of their own decision. But then you also see courts starting to force prisons to take on these sorts of programs because they decide that not only are there too many people in solitary confinement, but also there really is a way to reduce that number.
And has there been any study to try to get a sense of recidivism as far as if somebody's earned his or her way out of solitary and followed through and, you know, written the essays and earned back the privileges? Is there anything we can measure in terms of their likelihood of repeating and landing back in solitary?
No. Yeah. One of the major holes here is that there have not been a whole lot of studies because the data involved is just so complex. A lot of people cycle into these programs and then out again and then back in again. And there are definitely signs that maybe that is a problem and that, you know, more people should go into the program and not get out. And actually, in Colorado, there was a program like this, and the head of the Department of Corrections there, a guy named Rick Ramish, decided that the program wasn't working well enough because people were showing back up in solitary too often. And so he just did away with the program, and then if someone went into solitary confinement, he said, you're going to spend no more than a year here. Definitely. And as a result, their number of people in solitary confinement has really dropped, and Colorado has become one of the sort of national leaders in getting the number in solitary down.
I guess it would be disingenuous to think that there will be no more solitary confinement in a prison situation, but it does seem from what I read in your story and what you even told us at the top of our interview, we are seeing what could be arguably a more understanding approach to these inmates. And does that reflect a shift in the national attitude towards solitary?
I think it does. You know, one of the things that struck me about this program was that over the summer, I spent some time touring prisons in Germany. This was for a different story for the Marshall Project, and seeing how European prisons tend to focus on rehabilitation a lot more than in the U.S. They rarely use solitary confinement. They're much more sort of humane institutions. And while I was touring Alger, I really had these moments where it just reminded me of what I had seen in Europe and sort of this other approach to incarceration and sentencing that you're starting to see flickers of in the U.S. in the national political conversation. Congress is looking at some sentencing reforms, and you're starting to see sort of ways in which people are rethinking the kind of brutal and very tough way of dealing with people who have committed crimes in the U.S. And I think that the program at Alger is a really good example of that, and came about actually sort of a lot earlier than a lot of these other initiatives.
It's a lot of food for thought, a very interesting read. You can go to themarshallproject.org, and that's where you will find Maurice Chamas' piece, How to Get Out of Solitary One Step at a Time. Great to talk with you. Thank you so very much for being on Stateside.
Great. Thanks for having me.